You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with cinematographer Jaron Prezant. Jaron is the cinematographer on such films as Looper and Star Wars The Last Jedi, and his latest film that he's worked on is Rampage, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. We're excited to talk to Jaron about what he believes the heart of cinematography is, how he creates a shot, and the challenges of working with CGI. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Jaron, honestly, thank you so much for talking with us. This is just fantastic. A great chance to talk with you. I was wondering how you got into cinematography. What is it that appealed to you?
When I was real young, I was interested in photography. I got into photography. My father was always taking pictures and all. We were always doing home movies. And I started doing darkroom, you know, work and, you know, more fine art photography style work real young. But I always kind of thought of it as a fairly lonely path, because it was just you and a camera, and, you know, the style of photos I would always take were, they weren't like studio pictures, so it was just me off taking landscapes and still lifes and stuff. It felt really lonely, so I wanted to try to find something that had a little bit more of a collaborative exchange. And I was also really interested in movies, and so but I thought I wanted to be a creature effects man, you know, to make creature effects. Sure. And so I interned with a guy, and he said, "Oh, you have to sculpt." And I went home and tried sculpting. I was such a failure at it. I made like this hand, and it was so bad that I realized I have no skills in this, and I better look at something that I have, that I might have some talent for. And so I kind of started leaning towards cinematography. And when I saw a cinematographer on set, I was like, "This is exactly what I should do." And that cinematographer was Tom Richmond, and I ended up camera assisting for him for the next like 6 years, and that was all back in high school. And then at his suggestion, I went to film school, and at film school I met a bunch of amazing filmmakers and have been friends with them since, and here I am. Along the way I started doing electric work, and I became a gaffer, and so I got all both sides of the ladders up to cinematography, and here I am.
You know, you've been in this business for quite a while now. What to you is the heart of cinematography? What is it that it needs to accomplish?
I mean, to me, what cinematography is it's figuring out a way to set up the viewer to best receive the story that you're trying to tell. So you're trying to look for visual ways to tell the emotion of a scene, right? To tell where the characters are, or what the feeling you're trying to convey in a scene and in a movie is. But on another level, it's very technical, and you have to actually implement a lot of technique to achieve that emotional visual storytelling. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So, me, it's about this balancing act between art and technique, which is why I find it so fascinating. And especially today, when we're on the precipice of so much change, or we're right in that change technologically, both on the camera side, on the lighting side, there's so much changing that it's a really exciting time to be a cinematographer. Especially given that kind of duality of job requirement, you know, the juxtaposition of those two worlds, which I love.
You mentioned about, you know, finding that balance in a scene, but so let's say you're filming an action scene, and you've got lots of experience that, of course, now working in films like Looper, or, well, just working with Rian Johnson in general, like his his film, even his action scenes, they feel like there's a real sense of purpose. So,
absolutely.
So how do you create the sort of visuals in a moment like that to bring that meaning that you're looking for?
Well, every situation is different, and especially with each director. Each director has a different kind of workflow that they subscribe to, and so you, as a cinematographer, are working into, you're adjusting your own approach into that of the director. So, like, sure. Ryan has every shot already in his head, and what you're really doing, what I do with him is elaborate on those shots that he's already got. So it's like, when we get to the scene, I'm suggesting, okay, well, we could also do this kind of shot. We could change it like this. Do you like this or that? But he really has, Ryan specifically, has a real sense of visually what he's going for. And then there are other directors who don't, like Toby Hooper. Rest in peace. I mean, Toby was fantastic to work with, but Toby had a totally different approach. Toby was, you know, when he showed up, he didn't have any sense of what he wanted visually, and he would turn to me and say, how do you want to cover it? What do you want to do? And we would start discussing it, you know, and I would have an idea of what would work well for the scene, and then we would work off of that and bounce the ideas back and forth until we came to an approach that covered the whole scene, you know. But I mean, generally speaking, it's like, from the standpoint of each shot, you're trying to find something that is, first off, there's the style of the show that you're trying, sure, to establish up front, that you've set up with the director, you know, trying to figure out what the whole visual toolkit will consist of, right? You know, of course. Are you going to be on wide lenses? Are you going to be on long lenses? Are you going to be, is it going to be really, really high contrast, low contrast, or are we going to be dark, bright? You know, all of that visual, the visual style of the thing is set up, you go over and prep, and there's a huge, that then informs every single shot, right? And so once you create the, like, the toolkit and the approach, then it's applying that idea to each scene, and then on within each scene to each shot. So, and to me, there can be development of that over time. And there should be, like, you're trying to, like, carry the viewer along on a journey, you know. So the character's arc, the story has arcs. To me, you want the visuals to mirror those arcs, and that's a lot of what I talk with different directors about, you know. Brad Peyton, he's like in the middle of Toby and Ryan. He has I loved working with him. He has an approach which is both, on the one hand, very well conceived, and on the other hand, very open. And so it was a lot of collaboration in terms of coming up with how to approach scenes. And you know, we got to develop a lot of shots together, going back and forth to the sets. And one of the things we did on that on Rampage, which I hadn't done on other movies, which was really interesting and yielded a lot, I think, visually. We went to every set and actually lensed every set. We went through and figured out how we would cover it, just doing like a temp blocking.
Okay.
You know? And from that, we actually started finding, hey, wait, there's these new different angles. And as Barry Chusik started, the sets became more fine-tuned along the way. Like, you'd start finding these new things that Barry had put in there that you'd be like, oh, man, but if we shift what we were thinking 30 degrees off axis this way, then all of a sudden we can start over this cool piece and pull off to reveal this or that. You know, it was a really, really great process. Really enjoyed it.
Do you find with a lot of directors, like, there is that room for collaboration, or is it, you know, in more experience, or, like, is there room for creativity in that regard?
Some directors are going to be very open to suggestions, and some directors are not going to be. And you have to you have to figure out that working process early in prep.
Sure.
And I don't think, like, for me personally, there's neither one is right nor wrong, and I enjoy both. I enjoy all types, you know. I just have to figure out within the framework that's set up what's the best way for me to aid in making the film visually relevant in terms of a style that works for the film, that what images we're creating reinforce the film and don't fight it, you know, and then something that's exciting to me and exciting to the director. You know, you're trying to solve none of these things. You know, cinematography doesn't work in isolation. It works in conjunction with everything else on a film. And so you really want there to be a cohesiveness to it, right?
Sure.
you know, sometimes, like, when I'm talking with, I teach, and sometimes when I'm talking with students, it's like, there's this feeling like, what happens if I can't, if the director and producer won't let me do my thing? And it's like, but your thing is in conjunction with the director and producer. You're all in the same boat, and you're all trying to create a great product together. Mm. And that's a very important part of the process, and important part of prep, and an important part of the working relationships is actually creating those relationships that are strong, where you guys can do your best work and better work than you could do in isolation. Like, that's the best right. part of collaboration, is where the sum of the parts is greater. The sum of the, what am I messing up? the sum of the whole is greater than the
sum of its parts. Yeah. Even I was thrown off there for a minute. I'm like, I don't remember.
any good idiom.
You can see the relationship's really important. Do you find you often end up working with the same team? Because I know you've worked with Ryan several times, and I mean, you've worked with The Rock as well, now a couple of times, and JGL mm-hmm. a couple of times outside of working with Ryan. Like, do you work with a lot of the same people? Is it sort of a crew? Go crew by crew?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I think that the industry and definitely like the process that we go through lends itself to that, where it's, you know, when you find people that you like, that you like to work with creatively, you're going right. to gravitate towards working with them more, because it's that same thing where if you can do better work together than you could do apart, you're going to gravitate back to those people because you do better work, right?
Right.
You elevate each other's work to a better place. So that's, you know, I think that's the, to me, that's actually the end goal of all of networking and trying and working with different people, is that you're trying to find the people that you do the best work with, even beyond just the end result, that the process itself is the best it can be. Mm. You know, so that you, because if the process is the best it can be, you're going to yield the best work that you can get out of the project.
Sure.
You know?
Now, I mean, we were talking briefly before, like, the budgets of the films you've worked on have increased dramatically. I mean, you look at some of them and it's $60,000, $95,000, and all the way up to, you know, Last Jedi, which has like a quadrillion dollar. I'm not even sure what the budget was on that. Do you find it daunting to work on larger films, or is it the same process?
It is very much the same process, in that you're still designing a single frame that you have to tell a story through.
Mm-hmm.
The difference comes when you get into scale, the difference comes in how much you can prep things and how much things can go awry on the day.
So right.
Like, you know, when the reason that you need more prep is because there's a higher level of complexity to what you're trying to achieve, and there is a less of a margin for error of things not going right on the day. So, like, you know, if you've got Dwayne and he is on set, you need to be shooting, and you need to shoot something that is going to be great, that's going to be in the film. It's not going, you can't afford to have some piece of equipment not work, and it didn't quite work the way you thought it would, so you're doing something else.
Right.
That's not to say that you can't have flexibility, but you need to know that if you're planning a really complicated shot that has to work, you need to have time to prep that shot and make sure it will work.
Hmm.
And that's what drives up the cost of all of a bigger budget movie, you know, in terms of the production cost, is being able to know that things will execute on the day smoothly, you know.
Hmm.
Because that time on set is so expensive at that scale. You know, if a scene is two people talking in a room, you've got a lot of flexibility to do a lot of different things with it. If the situation doesn't work out the way that you had planned it to go,
right?
If that scene is on the edge of a cliff that you can only be at for 2 hours, and you need it needs to have a crane that takes 4 days to get to that location, you know, then it's a different equation, right?
Right, right, right.
But beyond that, the actual, you know, crux of what you're doing is exactly the same on every scale,
mm.
where you're trying to tell a story, you're trying to figure out visually what will represent the emotion of a scene best, and how to tell that story, how to convey that story the best visually with camera and lighting.
Now, having said that, in a film like Rampage, which I assume is not a documentary.
It's actually pronounced Rampage, and it's a documentary about...
It's the French New Wave, isn't it? Isn't that it?
It is the French New Wave documentary about the birds migrating in the trees in the spring.
Right. Now, see, there's a film that people want to see right there. It's
yeah.
But do you find it easier or more difficult? I mean, you're working with a lot of CGI in some of these films. Does that does that affect the way you shoot?
Yes, I actually think that when you're getting into CG work, you need to be more creative on some level than you do when everything is practical, because you have to conceive of things that don't exist. And it's one thing to say, it's kind of simplistic to say, oh yeah, well there will be a big gorilla there and there'll be a big building there. And, right. And you can say, okay, well I need to know that there's a building there. But then you need to start thinking, okay, well wait, there's going to be a building there. So that's actually going to create a bunch of negative fill. So now all of a sudden there can't be light coming from that direction. And if the monkey, if the gorilla is moving, and how big is the gorilla? And so what kind of shadow is that starting to place on? And now where do we want the light to come in a scene? Now, granted, remember, you're just entirely on a stage at this point. Right. You're on a back lot. And which way is the sun going to come within the context of this scene relative to these buildings that don't exist and these animals that don't exist? And I mean, it starts getting to a place where you actually really have to conceive of a lot of things that don't exist, and try to build them in, because that integration of light more than anything that doesn't exist that you're going to make exist is a huge, huge, huge element, you know, in selling good CG, you know. Like we have there's an element in Rampage where the sun comes out at a very key point, and so that was like an integration of a bunch of different departments to make sure that there's how we're going to play the sun coming out, when is it going to happen, how is it going to happen, you know, and the end result affects a series of shots that we're shooting practically with Dwayne, but the time that preconceives of a bunch of work that's going to happen 3 months from now, 4 months from now, you know, from production. And it's getting everybody on the same page that they know that's going to happen, that we're building that into the conceit of the shot, you know? It's really interesting because, I mean, on some level, like, there are shots in Rampage which Brad and I, like, we went through and we shot-listed, and they're shots that we never shot because they're within a scene where there's a bunch of just elements that end up being just CG shots. But it doesn't mean that we didn't design them. We designed all of the shots, you know. We go through all of them as in the whole sequence, even if we're not going to end up shooting pieces of it, or we're going to shoot just one little piece of it, or we're going to shoot the entirety of it. But the whole, you have to approach the whole thing, because the conceptualizing of the shot design is one giant process. And in order to make it all cohesive and sell the CG honestly, you have to approach the whole thing. You can't just be like, okay, well, that's a CG shot. We'll deal with it later.
Right.
You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No. That's got to be so complicated because you're putting this all together before you actually put it all together.
Yeah. I mean, you're conceptualizing it before. And I mean, there's tools that you're using, like Previs and whatnot. But Previs is also just it's just a tool. It's like, you know, Ryan is one of the smartest directors I know in terms of use of previs, and Brad too. I mean, they're really, really smart in terms of they'll get into it with previs, but then on the day it's just previs. It's like we have the ability to shift off of it because it was a tool for discussion, right? Mm. It's not the end movie. That said, it's like a lot of decisions once everybody commits to that previs. A lot of decisions are made based off of it, you know, because VFX is trying to work on a schedule that's crazy. And so, you know, everybody's moving forward with the game plan that's agreed upon, and Previs is a tool for making that agreement. If that, and you need to be flexible enough to allow for things to change, but also understand the implications of that change.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely, so, yeah.
But the point being that conceptualizing the shot design, all the shot design, that's where everything is really conceived of. And then in the implementation of that shot design, you have to consider all of the elements that shot design is yielded, whether it's CG or real, in terms of the effect on the actual set.
Hmm.
And how you then light it, how you then shoot it. One of the things that's really exciting right now to me, and I may digress a bit here, but I think that one of the areas that technology is really changing in a huge way to me right now is lighting. It's the lighting side, and being able to do matching on a level that we've never done before. It's really exciting. I mean, so on Rampage, we drove, we lit with a ton of sky panels, and we drove all of the sky panels in XY mode. And we would do things like take readings of ambient, different ambient inputs. Like at one point, we were in a bamboo jungle,
mm-hmm.
and the sun's going down, and we took a reading off the ambient sun bouncing off the canopy of the bamboo jungle, and then fed that XY. So I carry a spectrometer on me, and so did my gaffer Rafi Sanchez. And so we took the reading off the ambience, and then we plugged that into a sky panel, and all of a sudden it's yielding the exact same color as the canopy, And it's so accurate because it's a natural XY color coordinate, chromaticity coordinate, and so it's absolutely precise. And we did stuff where, in pickups, we were plugging in XY coordinates from the shoot in pickups to yield the same color balance on a stage that we had on a back lot in Atlanta. I mean, it's really
wow.
driving. It's really, really amazing what you can do to drive things forward to create cohesiveness. And we're just like that. All of that stuff is just scratching the surface. So it's really exciting. And I could see a place in the future where those values are also given over to VFX so that they know exactly what chromaticity we're working with in terms of light sources,
Right.
It could be, it's a really exciting time.
I mean, I'm sure it's changed a lot over the course of your career too, with the technology and all that as it develops. I'm sure it's changed drastically from the beginning to here.
I used to like color meters. Used to be a whole. Color meters to me are really funny because I've had them around for years, and I've always looked at them and been like, you're taking readings, you're like, oh, I think it's kind of like says it's quarter minus green, And so you put the quarter minus green on, you're like, huh, that doesn't really look right? And it's so vague. And this is a system now that's so precise. We're on the very, very, very front part of that. That change, which is an exciting place to be because, then we can start. We did some work with, there's this one plane sequence on Rampage where we took XY readings off actual flames.
Wow.
And then fed that into an array of sky panels for this explosion. So they ramped up for an explosion. And the explosion doesn't exist, obviously. It's a CG explosion on a CG plane, right? But the light that we're getting off of that explosion is absolutely precise.
Wow.
And so the integration of that shot is perfect. It just looks so real because there's this big explosion and there's the effects. We shot a bunch of elements for explosion. So, they've got all of these real elements and then their CG embellished elements that then it all pulls together in terms of color so seamlessly.
Mm.
So,
I guess the real question, the money shot, if you will, is how do you know you've got the right shot? When can you say that's it?
I think there are shots where you do the shot and right when you do it, things just feel like they've clicked. It's like flow for... I don't know if you've ever read about flow and for sports and things. It's like you get into this place where everything is just it's in perfect sync.
Yeah.
And that when that happens, you've got something that's right. Hmm. And I feel like that happens on some level on every shot. Like There's this really funny thing that happens where, you know, you set up a shot with the stand-ins, and it looks good, and you're like, okay, there it is, and then Dwayne walks on, or you know, or then Mark walks on, or whoever actor this is, you, like, they walk on, and you're like, it just comes alive.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, because it always blows my mind. I mean, it shouldn't, because they're such a huge part of it. But it goes beyond them. It's like it's everything just brought together in that one moment, and it starts really coming alive. And it's a powerful moment, just even on set for me. I mean, I think that's actually one of the things I enjoy most about cinematography is you're there first. You're sitting there experiencing it firsthand. It's a really amazing moment on set.
I love hearing about the stuff that goes on that you just don't think about. Like, that's the thing about cinematography, is that it's, you know, as a viewer, you take it in without thinking of the incredible details that go in behind the scenes, and this is just wonderful to hear. Honestly,
to me, that's one of the things that's exciting about working in film is that, and I love it. I mean, more today than I did when I even started, and I loved it then. But people are always like, "Oh, well, if you work on it, do you lose the enjoyment of it?" You know, and I feel like it's the opposite of that. You start to see, you watch movies, and you know what they had to go through to get the thing. And you can step back and you can just, like, experience the movie, but then you can also look into it and see, wow, they really look at the artistry that's gone into this, look at the, like, nuance, and understand what mountains they had to climb to get there. You know, to me, it makes film even more exhilarating.
I do have one last question before we wrap up. Is there a moment that was really challenging for you to get that perfect shot for you?
Oh, actually, there's a shot in Rampage that was actually a really, really good one. There's the scene in the forest where Joe is hunting the wolf, right? And they think that they're just going to find a dead wolf, but so, you know, he's got this big pack of bounty hunters, and they're all standing there with guns, and the idea of the forest was we were like, well, we're gonna haze up a forest, right? But it should be overcast. I wanted it to be murky and, like, you know, a little bit eerie. So in order to do that, we're like, oh, you know what we'll do? We'll actually fog up the forest. We'll take big hazers and mosquito foggers, and we'll fog up this huge, you know, we'll fog up this area in the forest. You know, which when I proposed that, JD, the special effects guy, JD Schwamm, the special effects supervisor, was like, yeah, sure. You know, not saying, like, you know, of course, if there's any wind, we're screwed, but, you know, we're like, okay, we'll try it, you know? But then, this one scene, they're all lining up trying to, like, they've heard something and they don't know what's going on. And then these deer jump out, and don't air this before the movie comes out.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a thing. But anyway, so because they all, like, stop and they're like, oh, that was weird. And then this guy gets eaten by the wolf, right? But a little bit of spoiler. So, you know, spoiler alert. Anyway.
Sure.
But so you got this shot where, first off, it's like, and then it's this long one-er where it's like, you've seen the deer go by, and then we're, like, hanging on people, and then this stunt happens where it drags the guy, like, 60 feet in the air, and then Joe runs past camera, and then we go back over him, and we pan around, and we come back over to his face, you know, and land in a close-up. And so and when we get back to the close-up, we want this negative to come in, and the whole while you want it to feel this, like, murkiness. So we got to have the fog, we got to have the stunt guy, we got to have the camera's got to pan with a guy that's flying through the air on a stunt pole that gets zero. There's no real warning to it,
yeah.
You know, because they're in the middle of the line. He's in the middle of the line, and then it snaps. It cuts off his line, right? So it's like, you know, so that you needed to have that, like, that surprise and that organic nature. And all of this, I was like, I'm going in, going, it's great. It sounds fantastic. We're gonna do, you know, go for it. And Mark Gilnick, our camera operator, he's really good. And I was like, he's not got a chance in hell of making this shot, because it's like a no warning pan, you know. But it was one of those things where it's like everything we talked through it. We talked through it days in advance. We rehearsed it. We get there on a day, and it's like we know what it's going to be. But it's like we're at the mercy of nature. We're at the mercy. We're at We have all of the actors and their like natural beats to consider. We've got the actual location, which is different than what we kind of thought it would be in, when we were prepping it. But it all just kind of coalesced and came together in a beautiful way. And it totally worked. And then Mark nailed it. And it was like, JD's fog was absolutely insane. I think he, like, I mean, the thousands of gallons of fog juice he went through with were just absolutely insane. But it was so good. It looked so good. And it just had such a visceral feeling to it that you're, like, in there with them. I completely, like, it was funny because, I mean, one of the things that Brad and I had talked about at the very outset, you know, we talked earlier about how you set up the visual style of a film. Like, one of the things we talked about was this embedded present camera where you really should feel like you're there. You're one of the people there. You're experiencing it firsthand. And that shot totally nailed that, you know, for me.
That's awesome. Honestly, Jaron, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's been a real privilege and really excited about Rampage and just what you have for us in the future. Can't wait to see what other projects you're working on.
Thanks. Well, it's been a pleasure, and thanks for chatting. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.